Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
It's alive. It's alive. Yes, welcome to a live edition, strictly brand new and shiny, of the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio, Strictly Confidential. And good evening, America. Good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 182 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and I was not killed in the WOA, and I am still alive and part of the Head On Radio Network. Welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively, and here, and only here, and only right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch over at CRMW.net. Have a look at CRMW.net. That's Coal River Mountain Watch, one of our sponsors, and see for yourself what mountaintop removal has done to West Virginia. And I want to thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, today being Thursday, September the 18th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Thursday evening, September the 18th, you're listening to a live show and you're welcome to call in and participate. There are several ways to participate. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And it's over at Strictly Confidential Radio that you're going to find links to all of the guests' websites and to the audio archives from the past shows. You'll find links there to the chat room, which is active right this very minute, the world's most progressive animated chat room. It's very easy to get to, very easy to use. Just stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com, click on the chat link, register yourself a chat name, and you'll fall right in. Great place to be on a Thursday evening. You'll also find links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You're also going to find a link there to the Head On Radio Network main site. And it's there that you can find out about all of the other progressive programming here on the Head On Radio Network, as well as PayPal buttons to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network. As I said, Coal River Mountain Watch does support this network, but in part, and we need your help also to keep all of the things rolling along that it need to be rolling along to make a network like this work. Now, the toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366. And if you would like to use your unlimited long distance, you are welcome to do that. If you have toll-free unlimited long distance, you can use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia, as does the toll-free line. That's 304-658-3333. Or toll-free 877-443-2366. Either way, we're glad to hear from you. My machine here on the dirt road in North Florida still is not, it's not on speaking terms with the Head On Radio Network mail server. So, again, mail arrives this evening to Peter at petergodbold.com as opposed to the regular email address. So, this evening, please use Peter at petergodbold.com, and that's B-O-L-D. Well, what an interesting week it has been, my friends. It's so good to be back with you. It's hard to know exactly where to begin to tell you all the things that have gone on. Still having a little problem with the old board here that I thought was a power supply. Turns out that's not it. It's, in fact, the board is melting down. So because Vista allows you one-shot install, you can install it over and over to the same board. I had to go and find the exact same board. I did. I found it on eBay, and it's a great board. I like the board, so I didn't really want to change boards anyway. So hopefully that will make Vista happy when I swap it out with an identical motherboard with the same revision number, et cetera, et cetera. So that ought to work out well. so, if the board goes down, Agnes will switch over to one of our many, many wonderful, fabulous music tracks this evening. I'll be right back. Need to let you know that the DJ across the street this evening is none other than Mr. Jerry Bonham. Absolutely fabulous mix set that Jerry has pulled together for us. You can find out all about Jerry at jerrybonham.com. And Jerry has been on the show in the past and is one of the DJs from the Trocadero's 30th transfer. Let's see here. Where to begin? Oh, I had an interesting little thing happen here the other day. Had to go over to my nephew's house. Now, his wife would be his wife-in-law to me, I guess. My nephew. Now, she is the one who signed thing they're passing around for marriage, protect marriage in Florida. The petition to put the ballot on the state of Florida coming up in November, in the November elections, to make a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. So anyway, I had to run over there the other day. They sort of got the cart before the horse and ordered DSL in before they got their nice new Vista computer. And so they were running without DSL and running Windows 98. So I made a heroic effort, since they already had the DSL, to go ahead and get Windows. Now, if you haven't seen Windows 98 trying to run the Internet, oh, have you missed something fun? Oh, what a disaster that is. Anyway, let's just say it sort of works. And so anyway, in setting that up, set up their homepage, and I was just testing it. They were standing around the computer, and I clicked on some random link. Didn't have my glasses on the homepage. I think it came up with the default MSN and homepage, and I just left it that way. And clicked on some random something blue on that page so that it would bring up another link just to be sure it was all working correctly. And what popped up but Sarah Palin's up-to-Jesus hairdo with her rimless $300 glasses that are apparently designed by some guy in Japan who's just thrilled and says he's right-wing too. Oh, Lord, what a world. And when Sarah Palin appeared on that screen, she was standing there, and she said, "It's Sarah Palin." Now, my Lord have mercy. You would have thought she saw Mother Teresa. You would have sworn she saw some sort of vision of the life everlasting. It's Sarah Palin. So anyway, I sort of ran from the room screaming. And, it's... with family, you just, especially when they're pretty much ignorant family, sometimes it's just as well to leave it alone. Anyway, I chose to leave that particular one alone. Now, if you're a new listener and you wonder why I don't fight, well, yes, indeed, I fight. In fact, I was walking out of the church a while back. I told a story of telling the substitute pastor, who had said, "I still think Bush is a man of God," from the pulpit. I walked out of the church, and as I shook his hand, I said, "So you still think that evil son of a bitch is a man of God?" Right there in front of everybody. And so, yes, I do stand up, but in the South, one has to choose one's moments. One doesn't just start it on this stuff at random. Oh, Lord, because it's like shoveling snow. You have to pick the snow you're going to shovel. If you shovel it all, you'll end up dead with a heart attack. So many things to talk about. Apparently the polls say they're turning around again for Obama. You know, it's gotten to the point that I just about can't, don't really want to look at it anymore. You know, who knows what will happen? Who knows what will happen? I think people are beginning to catch on that McCain is a Bush for four more at least years, and Sarah Palin is also Bush with lipstick, or Bush in a dress, as I saw it put on a website today, which I got great gleeful laughter from. Bush in a dress. with her Up to Jesus hairdo. If you don't know what Up to Jesus hairdo is, you haven't been listening to the Bob Kincaid Show on Wednesday nights, which appears just before this one. It's part of the Pentecostal look. It's called Big Hair, and in some circles it's called Up to Jesus. Where shall we begin? I still haven't even begun, just rambling on, following behind the chickens. Let's see. Let's start with the Log Cabin Republicans. Now, Wayne Benson wrote an interesting article. It's his weekly column, and I must share this with you. I don't think I've come across a clearer, more lucid statement of a message to the Log Closet Republicans as this. Wayne Benson says, until now I have always thought there was a place for the Log Cabin Republicans within the LGBT movement. Well, that's kinder than I am, but nonetheless, he has his reasons. Wayne says he thought there was a need for a group that could advocate from inside the belly of the beast and to do the dirty work that few intellectually honest people wanted to do. Wayne goes on to say the logic behind the organization was that it made more sense to fight for the soul of the Republican Party than run away and support the Democrats. Now, which members, speaking of the closets, they've traditionally disagreed with the Democrats on fiscal and national security matters, but we all know that those matters really are non-existent anymore. So Wayne points out that the rationale for the organization has significantly ended, eroded, over, nada. He points out the GOP has shown itself to be corrupt, inept, and incapable of good governance, and it has become the party of cronyism and the party of debt and the party of diabolical deceit, and it secures its power enthusiastically and regularly by pandering to the anti-gay base. So when the stock market plummeted and the real estate bubble burst and the deficit exploded and the gas prices are breaking new records, largely thanks to Republican deregulation, which goes all the way back to what's-his-face, the monkey movie man, Reagan. That's him. Back to Reagan's trickle-down economics, which we all found out was a huge lie and that the trickle was yellow. It was largely thanks to the Republican deregulation of the markets and the failure to explore any alternative energy sources. God forbid that we should upset their base, which is the oil diggers. So the Republican economic responsibility has proved itself to be a complete myth. It's been fatally punctured. That train has left the station. So Log Cabin Republicans also justify their party grounds on the basis of national security. But in 8 years of mostly Republican rule, iron-fisted rule, the House, the Senate, and the executive, over these 8 years, America has in fact grown weaker. The military is stretched thin. We're still bogged down in a bloody money pit called Iraq, and Russia is reasserting itself. Osama remains free in the same lawless Pakistani border. That's where Al-Qaeda is plotting, is rising again. The 9/11 attacks took place with the Republicans in power, including a president who failed to take seriously reports prior to 9/11 that an attack on the United States was imminent and that it would take place from the air. If you're an English listener, you may not know, but that's well documented. He ignored it when he was cutting bush down on the Bush Ranch, or was he cutting brush? Who knows? So anyway, based on the abominable record, you know, gay Republicans can no longer say that their party's performance over other matters overrides its unyielding opposition to LGBT equality. Now, Wayne does not point out the issue of abortion here, but so I'll go ahead and put that in for him prior to continuing with Wayne Benson's story. There are LGBT folks who are anti-abortion, and I understand that. I understand that some because of religious background, some because In other words, abortion affects everybody. It's not a heterosexual only issue. But you really can't support the Republicans over that issue, because the fact, should the Republicans stock the Supreme Court with more right-wingers, which would do an amazing amount of harm to this country, and, in fact, Roe versus Wade were overturned, it would not stop abortion. It would simply turn abortion back over to the states. And many, 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 many states here in the United States would continue with abortion. It becomes a states' rights issue. And many, many, many states would not. And I assure you that the activists who advocate for a woman's right to choose have already made contingency plans in case Roe versus Wade is overturned for the women who live in the states that do block it at the state level. They've already talked about busing them to states that allow it and how to go about paying for that. The bottom line is, to stick with the Republicans on the issue of abortion is a non sequitur, because even if you stuck the Supreme Court with somebody who's going to overturn Roe versus Wade, it won't stop abortion. Okay? Just won't. So, having said that, without coming down on either side of pro-abortion or anti-abortion, I'm just saying it's a non sequitur, it's a non-issue. In any case, Wayne does not bring that up, but I thought I would insert that. He goes on to say that the sullying of America's reputation abroad and the divisiveness on social issues at home, there is really no reason that securing LGBT rights should not be the primary focus of the log closet Republicans, as opposed to their insistence that they're for national security and we're not, and therefore a leaner, meaner government that doesn't spend all the money, which, you know, that argument's gone out the window. You know, the choice they present between equality and safety and the prosperity of the nation has proven itself completely false. It doesn't exist. And the final logic for the log closets was that it would create a big tent Republicanism. And it would do that by nurturing friendly Republicans who could transform the party. But unfortunately, this election cycle shows that instead of changing the GOP, it's the supportive politicians. They come out and they reinvent themselves to appeal to the social conservatives. So instead of standing on principles like, the log closet favorites, you've got Mitt Romney, you've got Rudy Giuliani, they made these very public and very crass conversions and bowed down to the anti-gay zealots. And even the earlier version of John McCain has bowed down to them. He once stood up against Bush. It was McCain at one point called them agents of intolerance, but even though he said that, he has bowed down to them. Look at the up to Jesus hairdo on Plain. You've even got Fred Thompson, who's acts like he just fell off a turnip truck in overalls, and he's socially trying to stir up the issues with gay folks. The truth is, Republican politicians who are pro-gay have no future in the GOP, period. There is no point of the log closet Republicans there advocating those people, because they have, and I repeat, no future in the GOP. Now, if they did, Massachusetts Governor Weld would have been a rising star, and even the most famous moderate, Arnold Schwarzenegger, well, of course, he was out of the hold I want to be president bit, because the U.S. Constitution pretty much shut him down. He cannot be president. But not being president has allowed him a certain amount of autonomy, and so he doesn't really have to pander to the preachers too much, although he's awfully conservative. So anyway, the log closet Republicans experiment to make the GOP, to remake it, to change it, has completely faltered, and they should consider closing up shop. You know, Benson says that at times it was a noble project, and he said particularly when the log closet Republicans were under the leadership of Patrick Guerrero, who refused to endorse the Bush 2004 election. He refused to endorse Bush because the president pushed for the federal marriage amendment. So in any case, it's obvious that the organization has outlived its usefulness and has been soundly defeated by the larger, wealthier, and influential anti-gay forces within the GOP party. The party is rotten to the core. It is not the GOP of your mothers and fathers. It thrives on homophobic bigotry and anti-immigration and in small-minded populism, and they foolishly mock our foreign allies. Lord, all the video clips that we've seen, all the audio we've heard of Bush mocking our foreign allies comes to mind. It's like a huge flash. It's like that last flash you see. In any case, he mocked them at the expense of our long-term national security. Remember for instance, Freedom Fries. So exactly where does a gay Republican fit into this intolerant scenario? Well, the Log Cabin's tragic endorsement of John McCain exhibits an obstinate denial of his anti-gay record and a stubborn willingness to admit that their one-time hero is now hopeless. McCain's vice presidential choice, Sarah, is a favorite of the fundamentalist fringe. Even that alone should point to their reevaluation. But if not even the reversal of the endorsement, you can take your endorsement back, but they don't blink. They're just in shameful cahoots with the destructive forces that deny LGBT people the most basic rights. And here Wayne brings out his most important point. The only chance for gay Republicans to be legitimate players in the GOP is to have the party suffer a string of crushing losses. The defeats have to be painful, they have to be substantial, and they have to lead to realignment within the party, where the role of social conservatives is diminished significantly. Clearly, Wayne says, the Log Cabin Republicans can save their party only by helping to defeat it. Anyway, both parties agree that this is an election of change. And so the Log Cabin Republicans can take the lead by changing its endorsement of McCain before they cause any further harm to the LGBT community. Basically, the whole GOP, it's suicidal. The Log Closet Republicans almost have a suicidal tendency to want to help the party that despises them. They are the pink elephant in the room that has to be discussed, and it will never be discussed. You cannot reform the GOP. There's no evidence they can, and it's time to simply disband. Now, there's the usual spectrum of replies to this. Some completely get it and support it. Others are saying that Wayne Benson is fear-mongering and trying to scare the LGBT community into voting for Obama. Imagine that. Fear-mongering. What's the terror alert today, people? Anybody know what your terror alert is? Be afraid. Be very afraid. Vote Republican. Be afraid. Little Johnny and Billy are going to get abducted by the homosexuals. Vote Republican. It's a whole party based on fear. And the Bible tells us, the Bible tells us so, that God has not given us a spirit of fear. No, 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 no. Let's see. Well, that sort of worked that through. Let's see. I have another little story. Here we go. Speaking of McCain, let's get off McCain. We can get far enough off McCain. Let's see. I need to send a little note to the studio. Here we go. And paste. Boy, I love copy-paste. Ain't it wonderful? Ain't computers wonderful when they work? Let's see. The Guardian, which, as we all know, is a news service in the United Kingdom and one of the few places you can still get the truth. Mainstream media has pretty much given that up. So So McCain was in an interview recently talking to an interviewer about meeting with the president of Spain. Now, during this interview, and it's very embarrassing, it's painfully embarrassing, McCain, much like President Bush, completely demonstrates ignorance about the world and geography. And where in the world is Spain? And is Spain in NATO and all the other things? In any case, the Guardian puts it, it was painful, it was extreme. And the Guardian points out that McCain sounded like he had a handful of cue cards covering all the party lines. You see, they just like Bush, they train him with the right lines. He would continue to refer to Chavez, Venezuela, although she was talking about Spain. He would talk about Bolivia. She was talking about Spain. He would talk about Mexico. He'd talk about Colombia. He'd talk about Castro. And see, that was all that was on his little cue cards. That was all on his little brain chip recorder. So when he was asked about Spain, he couldn't even answer any questions. It was idiotic. He went on to say, well, we're going to engage everyone in Latin America. You know, what an embarrassment. You know, this country has already suffered such a huge loss of prestige and credibility and even hope for the world. And now he makes a fool of himself by talking about Spain. He says, we're going to engage everybody in Latin America. And so at that point, she reminded him that Spain's in Europe. She reminded him twice, and she reminded him that Spain is a member of NATO, but McCain was just baffled. Just baffled. He went on to talk about Mexico. So the interviewer asked him about Europe, and he really had nothing to say. He just fell back on his talking points of being willing to talk to any leader who shares our views, meaning his views, on democracy and free trade, meaning giving up our jobs. And so you see, even when you write it down on a cue card, the Republicans are an embarrassment to us. And I'm sorry for those who cling to the Republican Party because they still believe that it's a party of limited growth. It's the party of, staying out of people's private lives. All those things the Republican Party once stood for no longer exist. The party has been hijacked by thugs. Enough about that. In any case, let's have a little listen to McCain's discussion with the radio lady who was trying to get him to agree to an interview with the president of Spain, but he was totally clueless. Roll it, Agnes.
So you have to wait and see if he's willing to meet with you, or you be able to do it in the White House?
Well, again, I don't. All I can tell you is that I have a clear record of working with leaders in the hemisphere that are friends with us and standing up to those who are not, and that's judged on the basis of the importance of our relationship with Latin America and the entire region.
Okay, what about you? I'm talking about the president of Spain.
What about me? What?
Well, I've never been to Spain, but I sure do like the music. Say the lovers are insane there. Oh, they sure know how to use it. Can't refuse it. Can't misuse it. Ain't never gonna lose it.
Well, I've never been to England, but I sure do like the beers. Well, I'm headed for Las Vegas, but I only made it out to dinners. Can't you feel it? You must believe it. Cause deep so good. South of Oklahoma, people tell me I was born
my God, SLI's listened to that homosexual radio show the other night. They's playing Waylon Jennings. Oh, my Lord, SLI, I know it's the end times now. The homosexuals are playing Waylon Jennings. Honey, I used to have Waylon Jennings albums when I was 13, 14, playing them at full volume here, rolling around the house. I got to tell you, you people don't have a clue about the homosexuals. We's just like y'all. And for crying out loud, we don't want your babies at all for any reason. Oh, Lord, whatever shall we talk about? Let's talk about the invisible and the overlooked. Now, as you know, in this program, we've had a number of guests who've spoken with us from a professional level about aging and the LGBT community. As we have found out, we're pretty much an invisible part of aging, and we have to suffer indignities like being separated from our partners if we go into assisted living, whereas married couples can normally stay in rooms, a room that holds a couple of people with their partner if they go into assisted living. Putting up with crass remarks and invasions of privacy by the other members of the other folks who are staying there. It goes on and on. We've heard some horror stories. In any case, Bob McCoy is youthful for being 78 years old. God bless his soul. He sings in the church choir. He takes weekly computer classes, and he regularly attends social gatherings organized by a gay senior citizens group in Brooklyn, New York. He lives in Brooklyn, New York. McCoy worries, though, about a day when he can no longer care for himself. He has no close family. He has no partner. And he's outlived most of his friends. Bob says, I'm used to having friends I can call up and say, let's go to a movie. But now there's nobody to call. Another couple, this couple is a newly engaged couple. It's Jim Fetterman. He's 62. And his partner, 56, they look forward to growing old together at their home in Queens, New York. They share a garden and a green Cadillac. The couple isn't sure if or when they'll be able to marry. As you know, New York recognizes the marriages from out of state, but you cannot marry in New York. The house they have is in Rivera's name. Rivera is the younger person, the 56-year-old. But because the couple can't legally wed in New York, Fetterman won't automatically inherit it should his partner die. And even though they are registered domestic partners in New York City, neither man will have access to the other's Social Security because the federal government doesn't recognize their relationship. It's not something we like to think about, says Bob. There's a lot of anxiety that comes with not having those things, says Fetterman. These are typical faces of the gay and the aging. It's a growing population is often overlooked by mainstream advocates. Gerontologists have not traditionally viewed sexual orientation as relevant to their work. And according to a study by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, most national health surveys of elderly citizens fail to assess sexual orientation. But gay seniors confront unique challenges. They are twice as likely as straights to live alone. They are 10 times less likely to have a caretaker should they fall ill. Older gay men are at high risk for HIV, and many suffer the psychological effects of losing friends to AIDS in the entire crisis. Many face discrimination in medical and social services, and on top of it all, they're less likely to have health insurance. Now, that study was done by the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation and Law. We've had them on the show. Amazing group of people. That's located at UCLA, by the way, the Williams Institute. Now, they estimate that gay seniors are half as likely to have medical coverage as their straight counterparts. Now, it goes on to say, in many ways, This population is a mirror opposite of what the mainstream aging community looks like, says Karen Taylor, who's director of advocacy and training for the New York-based services and advocacy for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender elders, or SAGE. Remember the, you recall the interview with the Chicago Community Center. They have a chapter of SAGE there. SAGE is the nation's oldest senior network. The average senior in the United States lives with one person, but two-thirds of LGBT seniors live alone. And if you don't have the informal support networks built into your life, then everything else becomes a bigger issue. Who, for instance, forces you to go to the doctor? You're sick. I'm taking you to the doctor. What happens if you fall? So as the community grows, in both populations, the growing invisibility, the questions are becoming harder and harder to ignore. So over the next 25 years, persons in America who are 65 or older are expected to grow from 12 to 20% of the total population. And various estimates indicate that lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered individuals will comprise 7 to 10% of that senior population. And meanwhile, like the baby boomers of all colors and stripe, aging gays and lesbians are radically redefining what it means to be a senior and how they fit into the larger community. Got news for you, folks. The aging LGBT folks are coming out of the closet, too. My stars, just never know when it's, you never know. They're just coming out everywhere. They're vocalizing their experiences, they're vocalizing their needs, and most importantly, they're demanding public recognition. Now, if you go back 40 years, says Gary Gates, who's the senior research fellow and demographer at the Williams Institute, it was Gary Gates, by the way, that we had on the show. If you go back 40 years, he says, there were virtually no openly gay seniors. But now you have a large enough group that people are starting to pay attention. In fact, at every 10 years, the aging community, the associations that provide service to the aging across the country meet at the White House. It's a 10-year sort of State of the Union regarding aging, and it has always been attended by the president, the vice president, and all the higher leaders who are concerned about, because this is a huge issue, what to do about it. So the last 10-year one, which happened about a year and a half ago, was a virtual scandal. George Bush refused to attend. None of the high-level people attended. They kept switching the meeting places. In other words, the Republican Party blew off the aging people. This huge conference that happens every 10 years. I have spoken directly to some of the people who were involved in aging who tried to attend that conference, and it was just appalling. So in any case, this year, SAGE is celebrating its 30th anniversary. It's running an ad campaign in New York to raise awareness about their constituents. And the organization is going to hold its national conference on aging next month, and it's going to be sponsored for the first time. Are you listening? Them LGBT lesbians is coming out, and for the first time, they're going to be sponsored by AARP. Can you say mainstream aging? Just that acknowledgement, just the fact that the AARP is acknowledging LGBT advocates or saying they're acknowledging the community is just huge. Huge. And the 40 million members, the AARP is considered one of America's most powerful lobbying groups, and they're an influential voice on health care and policy. They say, we look to a future. We know we cannot progress if we don't bring these others into our community, the chief diversity officer said. He points out the gay lesbian community is quite often invisible and overlooked. So isn't that amazing? The AARP. Lord have mercy, the AARP is not particularly fond of the Bush administration, as I just told you why, to be disrespected in that way. In any case, the Recognition is much needed, especially for older seniors, many of whom have spent years and years and lifetimes and years hiding their sexuality. And in some cases, they still do. I have an uncle who died several weeks back. He was in, maybe a month back, he was in, extended care facility, not a nursing home, but assisted living, thank you. And I'm quite sure he was gay. Never married, but never talked about it in the family. It was just your uncle who would never get married. I had two or three uncles like that. I wasn't until I was a big old boy in the country road that I finally figured that out. As I say on my website, one of the main ways that we're discriminated against is not acknowledging that we even exist. In any case, many of the seniors who are reaching these ages today were in their 20s and their 30s when the Stonewall riots took place in 1969, which is considered the birth of the gay rights movement, or at least the most recent birth. Until 1973, homosexuality was considered a mental illness. And in some jurisdictions in the United States, gays could be prosecuted. And as recently as 5 years ago, before the Supreme Court struck down the Texas sodomy laws, that was a fact. Attitudes are beginning to change. But many seniors harbor a chilling memory of being shunned, isolated, in fear for their physical safety. You know how your parents grew up in the Depression, how they tend to hang on to a dollar, how they tend to be concerned about financial stability. You've all seen it. We all know it. Well, it's the same thing. They've been through that crisis. Well, the LGBT community has been through theirs too. And they have serious memories of being shunned and isolated and abused. So social worker, his name is Lee. He's 59. He remembers in junior high school looking up gay in the dictionary to find out how sick he was. And he decided, until he was in his mid-20s, to keep it to himself. And then at 90 years old, Jerry is one of Sage's original female members. And she tells stories of growing up in the 1930s, oh my God, when women weren't supposed to wear pants. She describes men hooting at her on the street yelling, "Dyke!" Even though she had no relationships with other women, she was terrified she'd be exposed to her family or fired for her job. Yes, the seniors remember. And McCoy spent years as an Army communications official, remembers going to a bar in Greenwich Village in the late 60s and climbing out a bathroom window to escape from police officers during a surprise raid. Heck, I've told you about crawling into the basement at a private party which is raided by the police because it was the well-known homosexual house back in the 60s. So anyway, Fetterman came out to his wife. This is going back to the first couple, the very first couple, going back to Fetterman. Now, Fetterman came out to his wife in the Episcopal Church where he was a priest 6 years ago, and he was dismissed from his job and kicked out of his home. My entire life came crashing down, he says. And some seniors, like McCoy, still won't offer up their orientation willingly. Though McCoy considers himself out, he still hasn't even told his doctor, his therapist, or his social worker that he's gay. In some cases, that fear has actually prevented lesbians and gay seniors from accessing public services. One study done by the Milwaukee County Department on Aging found that gay seniors feared that they wouldn't be welcome at an aging center, and they were 5 times less likely to ever set foot in the door. So for those of us who can afford it, there are gay-specific retirement communities and free service centers dotted around the nation. Oh, how I want to get old and play disco records at those places. I know that several of my DJ friends are right in line, too. Wouldn't that be fabulous? You know, they all the senior citizens, seniors there, they play music from back in the day, and you know, in addition to shuffleboard, music is a wonderful connector. But I think the LGBT community could be humming a different song. But in any case, wouldn't that be festive to play at a old folks and being an old folks at the same time? Anyway, let's drop my fantasies. Let's roll along. says that for those who can afford it, there are gay-specific retirement communities and free service centers dotted around the nation, mostly in urban areas, none here on the dirt road. The most regular nursing homes give a shared room preference to their married clients. And only a few states require employers to give leave for employees caring for same-sex partners. So inside the care centers, advocates tell stories of social workers using gloves to treat their gay patients and only their gay patients. Are those patients being shuffled around from room to avoid harassment from the other residents? In rare cases, social workers say that couples have gone to the extent of agreeing not to visit each other for fear the staff will treat them differently if the staff should find out from those visits that they were gay. And many patients revert back to the closet to protect themselves. If you can imagine a situation where you're 80 years old with no kids and your partner's passed and no cousins and no relatives and not one service will help you or give you any respect. And that's what the LGBT seniors are facing in this country, which is why it's such a wonderful, wonderful thing that AARP is joining in. There's also the whole issue of same-sex couples having to pay federal estate taxes on jointly owned homes when married couples don't have to. Sometimes you have to fight with your blood relatives that are how to dispose of a partner's property. And many LGBT couples have set up all sorts of legal framework to help during these times, like powers of attorney, tenancy agreements, et cetera, but still, family can just take it right out from under you. It's documented in a movie that I saw recently. What was that called? Tying the Knot, I think? No. For the Bible Tells Me So, I believe is the title of that movie. Great movie if you haven't seen it. So, the good news, of course, is that attitudes are a-changing. At the New York Gay Pride Parade earlier this year, Sage made the rounds in two purple trolleys. You got to love it. Amid the "When I'm Old, I Shall Wear Purple," amid the 90-degree heat, and walking canes and colorful streamers waving out the windows. And some had been coming to the parade for years, and others it was their very first time. One couple in matching T-shirts held a sign that read, "Together, 51 years." Cheers from the crowd. And the fact is, the LGBT community is going through a sea change in the terms of aging and the way that we live our lives. And I must tell you that for the LGBT community, there is no time to waste. Let's see here. Near the top of the hour, let me tell you this little story first. I don't think anyone is not aware of the terrible, tragic train wreck that happened in California recently. Now, many people were killed. There were two engines that collided on the track. One train failed to stop. But the pro-family people over at the Campaign for Children and Families, which is a major supporter in California of the attempt to ban marriage, what does it say about this terrible tragedy on their Save California website? What does it say? You know, are they talking about the tragedy? Are they talking about the people's losses? Are they offering up their prayers? Nope, they're using it, as the right always uses issues to support. You know, 9/11 to support the, that man standing up in 9/11 crowing George W. Bush after ignoring the memo that there was an attack imminent in the United States and that it was coming by air, but he ignored that. That was our own intelligence. Yes, it happened on their watch. But in any case, that's another story. The Campaign for Children and Family Services, their website, Save California, has a nice huge headline at their website today. L.A. train engineer was unstable homosexual. And you see, that, people, is all you need to know. Why, you can't trust homosexuals to drive taxis or trains or be an airline pilot. Hell, it's beginning to look like you can't even trust them to cut your hair. That's why it happened, because the train engineer was a unstable homosexual. That's why it happened. You know, coming from my perspective, from the left, I cannot imagine a group who could ever do that, something like that, to lift themselves up by destroying others. Because basically, I just have to come out and say it. I'm not perfect, but I will say that the right is not perfect, but I will say that to us, human lives and decency are far more important than political endeavors. L.A. train engineer was a homosexual. That's what it was. So let's see here. As we come up to the top of the hour, we'll take ourselves a little top of the hour break, and we'll come back on the flip side of that, raring to go. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 head-on. That's 877-443-2366. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you can use that. And that's area code 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at petergodbull.com. And we'll be back after this break.
And he's back. riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And indeed, from the dirt road into your very own living room, this is Peter Godbold. You're listening to Strictly Confidential, LGBT Conversation Radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You can reach the show. It is conversation radio, after all. You can call toll-free, the number 4, head-on. Translates into 877-443-2366, unlimited long distance. Well, you could use that. Area code 304-658-3333. Both of those lines ring at the studio, hidden away at a mountaintop in West Virginia, and will be answered by the world's most fabulous control panel running woman on the planet, Ms. Agnes Kincaid. Email arrives this evening to Peter at petergodbold.com. That's G-O-D-B-O-L-D. Peter at petergodbold.com. Oh, my stars. Whatever shall we do for the second hour? Strictly Confidential. At the bottom of the hour, we've got Jerry Bonham. Party time at the bottom of the hour. And I even have a track we might even try to fit in for the bottom of the hour. But at first, I have to tell you that a Florida judge has ruled that the saggy pants law is unconstitutional. Now, if you don't know what saggy pants are, those are the pants that are worn such that if you're walking behind the gentleman who's wearing those pants, you can see his underwear and his arse cheeks under his tidy whiteies. Now, okay, so in Riviera Beach, Florida, okay, they all got, like, totally upset, and so they, like, made a law in, like, Riviera Beach, you could be picked up for doing that, et cetera, et cetera. Well, anyway, a Florida judge has ruled that saggy pants laws unconstitutional. I think it's a terrible breach of taste. You know, there's two stories. There's two stories. I honestly don't know which one is true about how the whole wear your pants such that you can see your arse cheeks and your tidy whiteys when you're walking. Now, there's two stories about how that came up. Both of them have to do with jail or prison. Now, one story is that people wear their clothes really loose and baggy like that to emulate or to appear to be like prison clothing. Prison clothing is not designer. It's you got an elastic band and these huge bloomy pants, okay? And typically they're too large or too tight, and so in any case, it was too, because it's cool to be a thug and to be in prison, and everybody's going to go to prison anyway, so it was like a thing to show that prison's cool. Okay. Now, the other story, also related to prison, is that it was started by the homosexuals who were in prison, who were looking for a partner, and to advertise that their arse cheeks were available, they would wear their prison blues or prison oranges or prison whatever color your prison happens to have, exposing their arse cheeks and their tidy whities to let other men know they's available. Either way, it's pretty stupid. But in any case, a judge has decided that the law banning sagging pants in this town, Riviera Beach, Florida, is unconstitutional after a teenager spent a night in jail on accusations that he exposed too much underwear. Well, I don't know. Speaking as a gay man, I really don't want to see your arse cheeks and your tidy whities anyway, but, you know, that's just me, and that's dirt road etiquette. I don't know what your particular etiquette is, but that's mine. If you have a different etiquette, then whatever. Anyway, Julius Hart is 17. He was charged last week after an officer said he spotted the teenager riding his bicycle with 4 to 5 inches of blue and black boxer shorts revealed. Now, Hart's a public defender, the 17-year-old's public defender, a Carol Bickerstaff, urged the judge to strike down the sagging pants law, telling him, "Your Honor, we now have the fashion police." Well, Circuit Judge Paul Moyle ruled that the law was unconstitutional based on the limited facts of the case. Technically, however, the charge hasn't been dropped yet. A new arraignment waits for Hart on October the 5th, and voters in Riviera Beach approved the law last March. A first offense for sagging pants carries a $150 fine or community service, and habitual arse cheek showers face the possibility of jail time. And Bickerstaff says she wants the city to drop the law, regardless of whether anyone dislikes low-riding pants. And it's the first time I saw a particular fashion that there was a law against. Now, my stars. So many fashions I would love to make a law against. But anyway, I've got some insight on this, people. If you want to get rid of the youngins wearing their pants showing their arse cheeks through their tidy whities, if you want to get rid of that, it's very simple. It's so simple. You will see the wisdom of this. I thought of it all my own. All you have to do is start a billboard campaign in your city, and on the billboard you show a young man walking away so that you can see his backside and his pants drop down well below his arse cheeks, and very clearly on the billboard. And underneath, in big old print, you just put, "That's so gay." I guarantee you, within a week, there would be no pants dropping seen for miles around. Yes, at last, a use for the expression, "That's so gay." Because, in fact, it is. It's totally, like, gay. What are you showing me your arse for? Gee, that's nice. Are you giving it away? Oh, my stars. Anyway, that's the word from the homosexual community. I'm sure I don't represent the entire homosexual community, but I represent the ones that listen to the Head On Radio Network, by golly. And we say, chat room points out, sort of like a copper tone can, sort of an ad thing going. Huge ones all over the city. That's so gay. Let's see here. 1998. This is 2008. So just a few more days. It'll be October 6th of 1998. So the anniversary would be October 6th, 2008. It was 1998, 10 years ago, that a young man named Matthew Shepard was hung on a fence in Laramie, Wyoming, left to die after being brutally beaten. And it's been about a decade after the docudrama The Laramie Project, about the people involved with it and how they were affected by the 1998 murder of the college student, was written. It was written involved with a group, Tectonic Theater Project. By the way, you can find out more about this story I'm about to give you at tectonictheaterproject.org. And that's spelled T-E-C-T-O-N-I-C, tectonictheaterproject.org. So his torture and his death became a watershed event, a historical event, and one of those moments in America that highlighted the fault lines in our culture, according to Tectonic. It was only a month after it happened that the Tectonic people traveled to Laramie and conducted the interviews with the townspeople on which the Laramie Project, the play, was based. By the way, you remember the high school that tried to do Laramie Project up in the Northeast? I think it was in New Jersey. Remember we told you that story a while back, and the parents were up in arms? Or it really wasn't the parents. It was just a couple of the teachers. The right-wing teachers. The right-wing teachers just didn't want that kind of stuff in their school, and homosexual sympathy stuff. But in any case, this month the Tectonic members return to Laramie, and they're going to find out what's happened over the last 10 years. It is an epilogue. Going to find out what happened over the Last 10 years, how has Matthew's murder had an impact, a lasting impact on the community? And how has the town changed as a result of the event? And what does life in Laramie tell us about life in America 10 years later? Now, according to the September 4th announcement, from the interviews conducted, they will write an article with their findings, and they hope to publish it in the New York Times as well as other major national papers, and they're also going to write an epilogue for the play to be published as a script version. And oh my God, the American Family Association will squeal that this is coming up again. This. The interviews are going to be about how the Laramie Project has changed people's lives politically, socially, religiously, and educationally. And one of the main differences about this trip to Laramie, as opposed to the original one, is that this time they're going to be videotaping the interviews, and that parts of these they're going to put on the website to create a video presentation called the Laramie Project 10 Years Later. Should be very interesting. Did you hear the story about the ban on political endorsements? Well, it's not necessarily a story. It's a given that churches are not supposed to endorse candidates. It's a separation of church and state sort of thing. In any case, the graduates of the Bob Jones University and their ilk, all those attorneys have decided that they're declaring that the clergy does have a constitutional right to endorse political candidates from their pulpits, damn it, and that the Socially Conservative Alliance Defense Fund is recruiting several dozen pastors to do just that on September 28th in defiance of the Internal Revenue Service rules. Yes, coming to a pulpit near you. The effort by the Arizona-based legal consortium is designed to trigger an IRS investigation that the Alliance Defense Fund lawyers say they will then challenge in a federal court. The ultimate goal, of course, is to persuade the U.S. Supreme Court to throw out the 54-year-old ban on political endorsements by tax-exempt houses of worship. For so long, there's been a cloud of intimidation over the church, says the Alliance Defense Fund attorney Eric Stanley. It's the job of pastors in America to debate the proper role of church in society. It is not the government's to mandate the role of church in society, and indeed it is not, unless it tries to cross over into controlling you and me. Says an opposing collection of Christian and Jewish clergy is going to petition the IRS today to stop the protest before it starts. They're calling the ADF's pulpit initiative an assault on the rule of law and the separation of church and state. Now, it's being backed by three former top IRS officials. Did you hear that? It's being backed by them because they was really upset that this was going on. Well, they were, oh, Lord, infiltrators. The group also wants the IRS to determine whether the nonprofit Alliance Defense Fund is risking its own tax-exempt status by organizing an inappropriate, unethical, and illegal series of political endorsements. As religious leaders, we have grave concerns about the ethical implications of soliciting and organizing churches to violate the core principles of society, the clergy wrote in an advanced copy of their claim published by the Washington Post. Now, the battle over the clergy's privileges, rights, and responsibilities in the political world is not new. And politicians of every flavor have come to count on the support, the explicit or otherwise, of religious leaders. And there are allegations that surface every political season of the preachers crossing the line. So what is different with the Alliance Defense Fund in direct challenge to the rules? So what's different here? Rather than wait for the IRS to investigate the alleged violations, the organization intends to create dozens of violations and then take the U.S. court, the U.S. government, to court on First Amendment grounds. We're looking for churches that are serious-minded about this, churches that understand we have both benefits and risks, referring to the chance they could lose their tax-exempt status, or it could set a precedent. And there are lots of takers. So far, three dozen church leaders from 20 states have agreed to deliver political sermons naming politicians and who the congregation should vote for and who God approves of. The sermons will be an evaluation of condition for office in the light of Scripture and doctrine, and they're going to make specific recommendations from the pulpit about how the congregation would vote. Hell, it might as well. I mean, it's come so far across the line. They do it with a wink and a nod. I'm not advocating it. I'm just telling you it's done already with a wink and a nod. They could oppose candidates. They could oppose both candidates. But they could also endorse. Now, the endorsements are prohibited by a 1954 amendment to the Internal Revenue Code that says nonprofit tax-exempt entities may not participate in or intervene in any political campaign on behalf of any candidate for public office. Interesting. The ADF is also being criticized for actively advising churches and pastors that they should violate the laws. And the tax system would be shut down if you allowed attorneys to counsel people on how to violate tax laws. So it's an advocation to break the law. So founded in 1994, the founder James Dobson of Focus on Your Family and William Bright from the Campus Crusade for Christ, the Alliance Defense Fund has challenged same-sex marriage initiatives, stem cell research, and rules that limit the distance protesters must keep from abortion patients. And it helped the Boy Scouts ban gay scout leaders. Boy, what a stellar reputation that is. Just stellar. We're not encouraging any congregation to violate the law. What we're encouraging them to do is to exercise their constitutional right in the face of an unconstitutional law. Moving right along, the ACLU has now filed a complaint over a Kentucky McDonald's, God, like they totally did, for calling customers faggots and other slurs. This is in response to customers being called faggots and cocksuckers and bitches in a downtown Louisville, Kentucky McDonald's. You may think that language is strong. However, if you had been a customer in that McDonald's observing this, you would have clearly heard it repeated over and over again. So I'm only telling you what you would hear in any McDonald's. The American Civil Liberties Union has filed a complaint with the City Human Relations Commission. The city law bans discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Now, what happened was five friends, including Teddy Eggers and Ryan Marlatt, went to the restaurant 6 weeks ago, and they were waiting for their food in the Ronald McDonald line, and an employee from behind the counter referred to them as faggots to another employee, according to the ACLU statement. Now, when Marlatt and Eggers approached the cashier, they said to the cashier, and quite rightly, I might point out, they didn't come to the restaurant to be insulted, and they asked to speak with the manager. Oh, my God, it's like there's nothing worse than an uppity faggot. That don't know their place. And so they waited for the supervisor on duty to appear, and while they're waiting for the supervisor to appear, the employee that had called them faggots started raising his voice and arguing with them and expressly called them faggots loudly in front of other customers and calling them cocksucker loudly in front of other customers and bitch loudly in front of other customers. Statement Eggers says that nobody should be treated the way my friends and I were at that McDonald's. And to top it all off, when they finally got to speak to the supervisor, she said she didn't see what the big deal was. Oh, Lord have mercy. And so Eggers says, I just couldn't believe it was happening. So repeated contacts attempts by Eggers with the Eggers, one of the men who was harassed, with the local restaurant management McDonald's corporate offices. Those attempts were met by hang-ups. Oh, my God, Ethel, there's a homosexual on the phone. Or unsatisfactory responses. So Marlette Eggers and the American, so you do not want the American Civil Liberty Union chewing on your hamburger. So in any case, the ACLU is seeking an apology and a refund of the $28 they spent for lunch, and that the employees receive an appropriate disciplinary response. That's all. They just want an apology, $28, and an apology, and disciplinary action. In the statement, Eggers noticed that, noted that one employee, just one, the cashier, tried to stop the slurs, and we really appreciated that she was trying to at least do the right thing when nobody else would. So the cashier, bless her heart, was trying to do the right thing. So there's more information over at the, wherever it is, the American Civil Liberties Union. Oh, Lord, I'm too old for radio. The American Civil Liberties Union site, you can find out more about that over at the American Civil Liberties site. Now, there's a track here that I have been wanting to play for a long, long time because it was requested a long, long time ago, and I have not gotten to it. So it's short enough for me to fit in here between right now and Jerry Bonham coming up at the top of the hour. And it's one of our favorite artists and a beautiful song that we'll run for you right now, Melissa Etheridge. Roll it, Agnes.
Left your light on. You know I'm here. The night is thin. I know you're alone. I watch the car leave. Your lover is gone. Let me.
And that, of course, is none other than Melissa Etheridge telling the gospel truth about how love feels sometimes. Wow. Great track. I'm glad it was requested. I've been meaning to run that for you for a long, long time. I want to tell you a little story about People Magazine. People Magazine and the other mainstream celebrity news sources, they are saying that, they're saying that as Ellen DeGeneres goes, so goes the nation. And they're saying that when Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi got married in California, there were no protests, no career fallout, no media backlash, just congratulations from everyone. It was just your average celebrity wedding featuring two beautiful people, one in pants, one in a gown, dreamy setting of flowers, champagne, candlelight, the whole romantic nine yards. No expense was spared. Well, that's all true, and I don't begrudge Ellen. She wasn't the first celebrity lesbian. They call it celesbian. You gotta love. There was Katie Lang, Melissa Etheridge. Oh, by the way, we just heard Melissa Etheridge. Chastity Bono. They were public about their sexual orientation before Ellen. But Ellen's coming out was certainly the most heralded, and who can forget the cover of Time Magazine, etc., where she says, yes, I'm gay. And the very acknowledgement of the fact was news and turned up on Oprah. But these days, it's just normal, everyday stuff, according to People Magazine. And this article goes on and on and on. Well, you know, I wish to God someone would tell your children that this is all just okay. Things are going fabulously, swimmingly well. People Magazine says, hardly raised an eyebrow. Apparently, the majority of the people who are under 35, heterosexual people, feel that there's no reason why LGBT folks shouldn't get married, but they're still afraid to tell their damn children. Why is it okay for you to believe that and for you to not tell your children? So while Ellen is getting married, and God bless her, I wish her well. It's not her fault. But People Magazine gushing on about not a protest, not a backlash, not a stir. Well, then, damn it, tell your children. Because while this was going on, a man who was attacked in a gay bashing died. He was attacked September 7th, and he is now dead. He and a friend were en route to a Washington, D.C. club called B-Bar. That is B-E-Bar. And the police have it listed as a assault, robbery, and possible anti-gay hate crime. What happened is that he and a couple of his friends, I think there were four altogether, pulled up about a block from the B-Bar, and they were getting out of their car. And as they were getting out of the car, they were approached by four men. One of the men said, "What's up?" The police report says that the men then punched Hunter and Carter, kicking into the ground. Eric Rhodes, who was a friend of both victims, said Carter told him he had swung back at the attackers before running to seek help. Rhodes said Carter assumed Hunter was also fleeing the scene, but Carter learned shortly after that Hunter had been knocked unconscious by the attackers. Hunter died of these injuries, 27 years old. The officers arrived at the scene after receiving a call about the unconscious person at 11:30, and according to the report, a set of car keys and $15 in cash was taken. So the report describes his attackers as four black males appearing between 19 and 22, each wearing blue jeans and T-shirts. Now, the others received injuries that were not life-threatening. I just wish that all this honey and milk toast and how everything's going swimmingly well, I wish to God you'd tell your children, because it's those minds that are not fully formed, those minds who literally don't have their brains fully wired yet to control things like anger. Literally. Do the research. Google it. are hunting us down. Well, you pick up your copy of People magazine at the grocery store telling you that it was wonderful. And as, and I quote, as Ellen goes, so goes the nation. Well, then, damn it, tell your children. Speaking of Lynn Cheney, what was that lesbian novel she wrote? Those who are new listeners to this network probably don't know that the vice president's wife wrote a lesbian novel. Oh, you just can't believe what goes on. Oh, Republicans, deceit be thy name. There is no need to stick with the Republican Party, kids. They have, you may believe what's written in the brochure, but let me assure you that brochure has been hijacked by scum and thugs. Agnes points out the name of Lynn Cheney's lesbian novel is called Sisters. Sisters are doing it for themselves. Well, I look through news here. Let's see, what does she say? Oh, here we go. She says she was on the early show, and she and Harry Smith brought up the marriage of an openly gay Californian screen actor, George Takei, to his partner, Greg Altman, over the weekend, and asked for input from Lynn Cheney, who wrote the lesbian novel, who's also the wife of the vice president and a mother to a lesbian. Oh, Lord, and they raise money on our backs every day. She says, I wish our daughter to have happiness and freedom to make her own choices, said the vice president's wife. She said that freedom in this country ought to mean freedom for everyone. Now, Page One Q attempted to contact Cheney's office to find out if she was specifically commenting on marriage, but no one was available to comment. Poof, they all go poof. They all go poof after the fact. So there you have it. The author of a hot, sizzling lesbian novel, who is the wife of the... I'm serious, folks. Wife of the vice president, mother of a lesbian woman who has a child with her lesbian partner, said she wished her daughter to have happiness and freedom to make her own choices. You know, the depth of betrayal to you and I and the everyday people that have come from the Republican Party is visceral. You can almost feel it. Almost feel it. Okay, such is that. Let's see. 10:33. I've been telling you about Jerry Bonham. Jerry Bonham has an absolutely stunning, fabulous gay bar across the street at the Paradise Dance Hall segment this evening. It comes from his Soul Recharge series. You can find out all about Jerry Bonham, who is an accomplished DJ, over at jerrybonham.com. That's JerryBonham.com. Now, Jerry has been a guest on this show and talked about the Trocadero, the 30th annual, the Pearl anniversary of the Trocadero transfer. There are many jokes made that night about Barbara Bush's pearls and casting pearls before swine, except it's a fabulous show if you happen to go back through the Head on Radio Network archives, or the Strictly Confidential archives. You might like to hear it. Wonderful DJ, great guy, and an absolutely fabulous set. And so as we gather up our umbrellas and our raincoats and our pocketbooks, and as we wander across the street, Jerry Bonham is behind the turntables, and it's already rolling.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
No matter where you are, no matter how far, just call my name, and I'll be there in a hurry. On that you can depend and never worry. You see, my love is a lie. It's like a seed. It only needs the thought of you to grow. So if you feel the need for company, please, my darling, let it be me. For you. But a writer put it very nicely when he was away from the one he loved. He sat down and wrote these words.
And there we have it. That is Brainstorm doing Lovin' Is Really My Game. I Can't Catch No Man, hanging out at the discotheque. Fabulous, absolutely fabulous lyric. Oh, my. Jersey points up. He loves the strings, as we've learned from so many of our wonderful music guests. Those were real violins with real honest-to-God people playing them. Just fabulous. In any case, thank you. Jerry Bonham. You can find out all about Jerry Bonham at jerrybonham, B-O-N-H-A-M, .com. And Jerry is one of the many wonderful DJs we have in our Paradise Dance Hall circle of DJs. Maybe I should start calling it a stable. I'm sorry, I didn't really mean that. Let's see. I want to close by thanking the chat moderators and the news ninjas who are in constant pursuit of the truth. Without them, we could not do this program, and we appreciate their help, and they're sending the news articles and keeping us rolling. Tomorrow evening will be a regular edition of the Head On Radio Network. Bob Kincaid will begin at 6 p.m., followed by moi at 9 p.m., and we hope to see you back tomorrow evening. And, again, I've missed you guys this week, and it's really good to be back in the stable. So, in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.